Gentlemen, boys and ghouls, to all of our non-binary friends, to everyone on the spectrum and in between, welcome to another episode of The Shudder Show. My name is Ken Stachnik, and with me, as always, is...
David Marlowe.
David, how you doing today?
Tired, Ken. So tired. You know, buying a house is, you know, people tell you it's easy. They tell you it'll be the easiest thing you'll ever do, buying a house. The market's just where you want it to be. And, you know, nothing ever goes up and down in that particular market. But no, it's been great. Things have been going great, to answer your question. We just got a conditional approval on our first house, or our starter home here in Indianapolis. And it's, yeah, we're excited. So we're just awaiting inspection, and we'll see whether or not there's anything in this house that's going to make us go, oh no, we don't want this house.
So, yeah, no, yeah, yeah. To all of our listeners,
it's a flip. So you never fucking know. So even on a slab foundation, there could be something going on under there.
Yeah, if there's ever been a good reason, in my opinion, for us to have had a little bit of a break between our episodes, you being a first-time homeowner is a pretty good reason. So I'm very happy that we're back now, and we are here to discuss a little movie called Deadstream.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you were the one that recommended this, and I am so glad that you did, because I think we've been trying to do a couple of episodes on featuring some more bangers than anything. And I know every once in a while when we do, say, not necessarily a Shudder original, but we do one that neither of us have seen before, it leaves us sometimes with not quite enough to talk about to fill the full hour that we want to. Or it's not even that it's not because it's not interesting. It's because that there's not a whole lot of material to talk about, because they don't have a whole lot of interviews, or they don't have a whole lot of making of material. But I am happy to say that the marketing on this film has been spectacular, and there's a whole lot of different interviews that you guys can find on YouTube from this couple of directors, which, by the way, I believe it's Joseph Winter and Vanessa Winter. They are a married couple that that produced and directed this. And it's spectacular. Ken, what were your thoughts? Your beginning thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. I got whiff of this movie initially because I just kept hearing it getting compared to Evil Dead, and I was like, "Ooh boy, is that a high bar to clear?" And I am very glad to report that this movie gets the tone and the fun and the silliness and the comedy of Evil Dead almost better than any other movie that I've seen. A lot of other movies, you know, oh, we're going to do the cabin in the woods thing, or we're going to go ahead and we're going to do the deadites kind of a thing, or we're going to have a schmarmy hero kind of like Bruce Campbell. But very few of them are able to bring them all together and also understand what makes Evil Dead tonally such a different thing and such a special movie. And this absolutely does that. I mean, I think starting off, one of the big things that this movie understands is when you're gonna have a main character, or like, it was because there's only like three characters really in this movie, more like one and change,
three major characters and a couple of occasional pop-ups that submit their videos to the main character to tell him what he should be doing.
But like, so when a lot of people start approaching writing a horror movie, one of the things that happens is, okay, a lot of these characters are going to get killed. So the not very smart approach that a lot of horror movies take is they make all of the characters unlikable, which is very easy to do. All you have to do is just not give a crap when you're writing, and you know, sure enough, the audience probably won't care unless you happen to give it an incredible
there are so many films that I've seen where my main complaint is like, I literally have zero reason to care about anybody in this movie because everyone is a genuinely terrible person. So
yeah, and I think
the only thing that I think is the only property that I can think of that is accomplished having just purely unlikable characters, but I just stick around, is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is just a show about genuinely terrible people.
Yes, but okay, so one of the things that makes Always Sunny in Philadelphia work is while you don't like what the characters do, you understand the id from which they come, and they are consistent in who they are. And so while you say, I wouldn't make that decision, you might say, but I've always wanted to try, like, I've always wanted to run that far in that direction. And as a result, you enjoy seeing these characters make decisions that you wouldn't, but you're smart enough to know why this is not going to go well. And then the performers and the actors are able to make it funny and interesting in the way that they punish themselves or others, and they react to it. And what happens in a lot of horror movies is they end up with a spat of characters who are going to get killed. And so the screenwriter or the producers or the director decide, if we're going to root for these characters to be killed, we want you to dislike them. And then you end up with a bunch of movies where you hate every decision every character makes. You hate the characters. And when they die, you're not excited. You're just relieved that you don't have to deal with that person anymore. Now, what Sam Raimi thoroughly understood was with Bruce Campbell and with the character of Ash, you had a character who you found charming and likable, like
but also a little douchey.
Well, like douchey, like you understand, you understand why he's in the friend group, right? But because you don't entirely like him, you are totally fine with watching him get the ever loving shit kicked out of him. And that's what this movie totally gets. Because again, you're not rooting for the character to die a horrible death and to be gone. You are rooting for this character to just get the shit kicked out of him, which is a very much a Three Stooges thing, which, surprise, surprise, one of Sam Raimi's favorite series of movies. And none of the Three Stooges are likable characters, but you like watching them all abuse each other. And that's what Deadstream gets absolutely right. This main character just getting the shit kicked out of him by demons and himself and bad decisions, but he's pretty charismatic and he's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Well, and so it's like it's, rallies, it's what, yeah, you're there.
What if you took the guy from the controversy of like from I'm sure you've heard of the whole Try Guys controversy, where I'm not gonna walk through the whole controversy or anything, but it's like seeing that guy trying to redeem himself by throwing this whole stunt and then just watching it all play out. Like, yes, sure, you're going to enjoy watching the guy get the shit kicked out of himself as he just tries to beckon for views, which I will say, like, this film does such a these filmmakers do such a great job at nailing the theme of the YouTube streamer or more like just the YouTube host of who has the gimmick that he goes to. He puts on his weekly videos, and I like the format in which they have put his channel in it, because we watch my wife and I, like, I'm a huge, I like, I watch so many different YouTube is I watch YouTube more now than I actually watch Netflix or any other streaming channel, just because there's a lot of great content out there, and there's I kind of watch it more for the personalities. And they seem to have really gotten a grip on the look of his channel, which kind of reminds me a little bit of yeah, sort of like the Try Guys or the guys from Watcher who do like puppet history, and they also do like the Ghost Hunter shows, Good Mythical Morning, those kind of guys. they took those personalities and they just made it a little, they make them a little less likable to the point where you're like, you know what? I could watch this person get terrorized by ghosts for 80 minutes. This would be great.
It's not even, I would say that they're less likable. They're just, they are just on the always sunny side of, man, this isn't a good idea. I don't think you should be doing this, but
let's not send you down a river trying to reenact Moses as a baby.
Yeah, exactly. no, that's the thing. And this character is not, he's not Logan Paul. You know what I mean? He is not.
Yes, he is a character that you so hate. Unlikable.
Yeah, it is somebody that you find kind of fun and charismatic, and you give him credit for facing his fears, and you give him credit for doing these crazy things, even if sometimes that's, you know,
if he occasionally pulls a Logan Paul and goes into a suicide forest.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, he doesn't go into a suicide forest, which is, again, like, that is really crossing a line because you are disrespecting a dead body. This person is going into a haunted house, which, you know, and an old haunted house.
What was this character's controversy? It was that he pulled a stunt with a homeless man that involved the homeless man getting shot by the police?
From what I understand, it was wasn't he paid a homeless man to fight him, and then the homeless man had a heart attack?
Yes, that's what it was.
So like it was in poor taste, but
it was in very poor taste.
But it wasn't, and I'm not trying to defend this here, but it was not, I'm gonna go and fight a homeless man. It's I'm gonna pay a homeless man to fight me, and then the homeless man dies. And that is sad and very much not advised and in poor taste. But that is not going out for abuse. That is going out and, you know, that is testing the limits of what is acceptable. And as he says, he feels terrible about it. It wasn't, you know, yeah.
It's the equivalent of the radio station who decides to have a contest to see who can chug the most water, not understanding that you can die if you drink too much water. Which, yes, that was a thing, by the way, here actually in Indiana, where a radio station actually did a contest where they, like, you would win, I think, like an Xbox 360 you were able to chug 2 gallons of water, and a woman was able to do it, but then she died 5 minutes later. You know, they just not understanding the moral and legal ramifications of pulling a stunt like that. And this is just kind of the person who doesn't think through the legal ramifications and the moral ramifications. And now you get to watch him be terrorized by demons.
So David, why don't you tell our listeners at home what Deadstream is about in broad strokes?
Okay, Deadstream is about a character named Sean Ruddy, who, in an attempt to redeem himself from cancellation on his YouTube channel, decides to hold a full 24-hour streaming sensation in a haunted house to conquer his fear of ghosts, to which then the audience is an active participant. All the while, turns out that the haunted house is in fact actually haunted, and that ghosts from hell, particularly a testy ghost, has tricked him into signing a deal, and now all of a sudden he has to decide whether or not he goes through with the whole night, or whether he quits and doesn't collect any money or redemption.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good encapsulation of what happens in the movie. And I will say this, very much in the Evil Dead spirit, no pun intended, the demons in this are very much the mischievous, mess with you, shove fingers up your nose, vomit on you, gross, fun, squishy kind of ghosts. This is not like Spookums jump scares the whole time.
There's some spooky shit in this one, though.
Oh, no, there is some spooky
stuff.
There's
a couple of
sure.
moments in this that were genuinely like kind of, what was that? I think it was like the hanging body in the hallway.
Yes, but what I'm saying, like, it's not like Terrified, where the ghosts are serious. Like, the ghosts are having as much fun torturing our main character as the audience is
watching. It's what I would hope to be as a ghost, Ken. Like people talk about, like,
just a scamp. Yeah.
Man, if like if I could be like that kind of ghost, like if I knew for a fact that if I died and I was going to be able to haunt something, like a fit, like not just like a, oh, I'll just, a slight breeze will blow this door closed. That's lame. Like, but if I could actually fuck with somebody, Ken, I'd be the best ghost. I would have the time of my fucking life. Like, I would curse up a storm. I would stick fingers in holes, and it would just be, I would have so much fun as a ghost. Ken, what would you do as a ghost if you had to haunt? Who would you haunt? I suppose.
Let's see here. I would haunt every member of the last presidential administration, and I would just mess with them to an endless amount, and I would make them. I would just make every single day that they were alive something they regretted by just making it uncomfortable and weird. I would pop out of the toilet. I would, you know, I would make sure.
You want to put yourself in that toilet, though?
Well, no, like, so you pop out of the toilet. And because let's be clear, these are fancy rich people. Those toilets get cleaned pretty regularly. So, like, and mind you,
they don't flush, dead. Though, the way that most toilets are supposed to flush, Ken.
Well, no, they do flush.
Terrible flushing. They just don't flush documents.
Well, they just have to flush 10 times, which also, it is wild that, like, a building that has, like, 14 fireplaces in it, this guy was flushing shit down the toilet. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about Deadstream. And again, how much fun this is. This movie made me laugh. It made me squeal. It made me writhe in delight. It was gross. It was spooky. It was tons and tons of fun in the same way, and without being overly bloody, without being like, it's a wet movie, but it's much more like
too
squishy.
Wet.
It's much more squishy and gross than it is like horrifying and, you know, like, it's not, I'm not scarred by any scene in this movie.
It's very fascinating because Joseph and Vanessa Winter, when they were making this, I think they went from it as from the concept of, like, they wanted to do like a do-it-yourself horror movie in the state of Utah. But as they talk about it, they're like that went out the window the second we had the first exploding head on camera, because then you realize, oh no, we require experts for this kind of situation. But like their whole approach to this was, can we do a horror movie between just the two of us, like a found footage horror movie with these elements in it? And it started that way. And then I think they were able to accomplish a very minimal amount of budget and effects. I will say that the practical effects are absolutely spectacular. But yeah, no, it was very self-contained. This is also one of those movies that was shot just before, if not around the pandemic. I think it was the shooting was during 2020. So, you know, I think during that time when like self-contained film shoots were kind of the norm or the more preferred method to make a film, I think they probably knocked that one out of the park. So I know, like, originally the Joseph Winter wanted this to be a more neatly edited film, but I think Vanessa then pushed for the audience to be experiencing the event in real time, because that in and of itself, like, helped push the story itself forward. There was no reason to take a pause. There was no reason to give the audience a moment to come down off the what had just happened. But it, and that's another thing I think that works really well in this film is that audience participation. You get kind of that, you see a little bit of society in this two-person film. You get just from the random comments that you see the people making in the film, which are absolutely hilarious. Like people like pitching their own shit while all of this is going on, which is not just like, you know, I've seen that in real time. I've seen that happen.
They really get the live stream chat right, the absurdity of the names, the way that half the audience is egging him on to make things infinitely worse for himself, and the other half of the audience is like, bro, get out of the house. Oh my God, oh my God. They do such a great job of motivating all the edits about making the reality of the found footage make a lot of sense. This is something that's being shot in real time. It's being edited in real time. The cameras are there and will pop up, like because they're motion controlled or like are motion activated. But there's no reason to cut to them otherwise. The other thing, speaking of like if they shot this, 2020 during the pandemic. So one of the things is somebody who's done some productions that were like 360 VR stuff. One of the big problems with doing any kind of shooting like that is where does the crew go? Like, how do you monitor what's happening if the character is running around the house and you can see in almost every direction? And the way that this is shot is our main character has like a forward-facing GoPro camera, and then he also has a GoPro camera that is facing towards him, which more or less
Or
is
you have a
like,
spear cam
or well, or like, and he has other
where the
cam.
ghost, where the ghost is holding the camera.
Yes, but the point is that for most of the shooting, there is no sitting right behind the camera so the directors can see what's going on. So like, how do you monitor what's going on? The movie that we shot was all done in a spooky hospital, and it's the only time where we'd like roll and slate, and then like everyone would run away from the set, and we were literally like, we weren't watching monitors, we were watching more like security cameras that we had like mounted in various places around the set. So not because they were in the movie, but just so we could see what was happening. And that like, so part of the shooting of this is managing how do you shoot a movie where your main character is running around with these two cameras on, and where do you hide in between takes? Like, there are times when you can see the timers on the GoPro don't
Oh yeah,
make
and
sense.
these are action cameras too, like where like a sharp turn of your head can completely cut out the feed. But like also too, like the playback on cameras like that, it takes a while.
Yeah, no,
So so
exactly.
like they were talking about like how like they rehearsed a lot for this, but they ended up actually doing a lot of takes because just the technology itself isn't quite. It's not there where you can rely on them. Like the playback's really, yeah, the playback's really delayed. You'd have to, yeah. So like things like whipping their head too fast to the side would cut a camera, and then they would just find themselves battling the technology a lot
Well, like, so
where
like if you watch a movie like Hardcore Henry, right? Where like the whole point is
crazy movie.
crazy movie, but like, so the whole point of that is that's one forward-facing camera, right? And
Yep.
then if you look at the behind the scenes, he's got like a helmet on because he has to be able to see. The camera has to be where that is. And then he's wearing like a backpack full of batteries and wireless transmitters and all sorts of other stuff to support the making
He
of the
could
film.
not skip leg and back day.
No, not at all. But more importantly, the camera is only facing in one way. So if you are saying like, oh, run down that road in that direction, you can just put the crew behind him and he just can't turn around. But when you have a forward and a backward facing camera and you don't want to, and again, you're not being able to stream in like, you're not able to stream the video live in a way that you can with like a Teradek or with the one of the Red cameras or the Arri's. Like, you don't want to love the take and then get like start looking at the footage and realize, oh, there's the whole crew in the corner, because the compression that comes with these action cameras is not something that's going to be allowed, that it's going to make it easy, cheap, or pretty for you to be doing rotoscoping or any kind of heavy post like effects. This is much closer to what you get in the camera is what you're going to get. You can do some, but you are not talking about a thick file where there's going to be a lot that you can fix in the grade, or you're going to be able to pull plates that you'll be able to comp things in and make it look okay. This is much closer to putting on like a live haunted house kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. And the
great thing, it's a what you see is what you get kind of thing.
Exactly. And because this film mostly is one character and is written as one character, not four people running around at separate times, like you are, like, from a COVID standpoint and from a small crew standpoint and from a social distancing standpoint, this is exactly the kind of movie that you can take advantage of the problems that you are having because of the real world around you. You know, as opposed to having to apologize for the fact that you're shooting during a pandemic. It's like, yeah, it's one guy running around a house and we're all downstairs and we've got our masks on. And then we can go upstairs and we can reset and change stuff, but everybody can kind of keep their distance and do their thing. And yes, we have to do testing probably extensively for our main actors, but like maybe the directors and the ACs who are going to have like direct contact with the crew member. But you're not going to have to do it with everybody who's around all the time, because the nature of what you're shooting is distance based. And that's actually one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, was I was so impressed with just the production of this, in the fact that this is truly kind of uncharted territory. This isn't faking found footage, which is mostly what you get with found footage movies. This is kind of doing what you see is what you get. It's much more staging a haunted house. It's much more putting on screen what the character is kind of going through. And that creates a bunch of challenges that you don't learn about in film school. That creates a bunch of challenges that you can't just read a book about. It's a bunch of, well, we want to do X. How do we do that? And then a bunch of people get together, think about it, and come up with solutions. And in this particular case, I think they absolutely knocked it out of the park.
And now, Ken, as somebody who's currently now, like you're sort of, you're going back to your film school education now, and you're actually working with a lot of film students and helping them develop their own improvisational skills on set. Like, how does this movie go into that a little bit? Like what have you taken from this? And have you actually talked to any of your students or any of the people that you've worked with over at this school? Which school was it? It was
San Jose State.
Yes. So have you been able to talk to anybody in your classes about this, or have you been able to implement this?
Not as of yet. I am still in the early days right now. I am just sort of TAing for an acting and directing for film class. And in that class, the teacher is very much a theater teacher and is very much coming at this from a theatrical directing tradition. And she is all about working with the actors and on set and working with the actors to find their motivations, and how do you dissect a screenplay, and how do you bring that aspect of it? And what are the things that I'm able to bring as a scrappy independent filmmaker is some more of the practicalities of shooting. Like, so one of these students is they're shooting a project, and they are doing a scene from The Sopranos. And it is a scene where two characters are dumping a dead body at a construction site. And I immediately had several red flags from a production standpoint come up in my head, because while it is a good scene to choose because it is two actors, so it's not too much that you're biting off of. There's no animals, there's no kids, you're not on the water. It is, and the only prop that you need is like a guy rolled up in a carpet, right? You don't need a prosthetic dummy. There's no special effects.
Couple of sandbags and a thing of tarp.
Yes, exactly. Like, very low budget. However, you need to find a place where you're dumping a body. And these are students at a university that is in the middle of downtown San Jose. And You're not, so you can't go to the docks or the beach because we don't have those here. That's not, you know, an hour and change drive away. If you do go to the docks or the beach, you are looking at going to a public beach or public docks, which not conducive for dumping a body because there's people around and you don't have permits to shut things down. If you are going to the docks or the beach, you're going to have all of the wind and problems that go with being near the ocean. And if you're going to do as the screen is the screen as the screenplay says, and you're going to do it like at a construction site, my thing is, does your uncle own a construction company? Because for insurance reasons, they're not going to just let you go and visit. And because people steal stuff from construction sites, you are not going to be able to do this, you know, like skeleton crew, guerrilla style,
Without the cops showing up.
without the cops or at least a security guard telling you get the hell out of here. And even if you are lucky enough to have an uncle who owns a construction site, chances are, for safety reasons, you're going to have to wear hard hats because that's how construction sites work. And
Nobody wants that liability charge.
well, nobody wants that liability charge. And so you're seen as two gangsters dumping a body with hard hats on because they're concerned for the legality of safety laws. All of that to me is a bunch of reasons why. Well, and I have not seen these students, the results yet. So fingers crossed and, prayers that it works out for them and they figure it out. But it brings up a whole bunch of production issues. And one of the things that this movie, I feel, does is it backs into the resources that you know that you have and you can pull off. So in this case, with COVID, you don't want a bunch of people. You don't want a bunch of people around because that just multiplies the amount of testing that you have to have, the amount of COVID safety officers that are there. And instead, you just need to find a dilapidated house. Fine, that's relatively easy to do. Not one so dilapidated that it's going to be a safety issue,
Well,
but
they actually, and this was, I think, the house itself is a historical home, but like they actually had to bring in a crew to support the second floor because it was so dilapidated. And I think the carpenter who was actually putting the beams in to support that second floor, and they of course they had to dress the set a little bit, but outside of that, like it was all they had to do some structural carpentry work, which is where a lot of the budget went. But I think this is actually a historically haunted house. And so while working on this, apparently the crew was very was particularly spooked. I think one like what one of the carpenters was a guy who grew up there, and he said like you know as kids you go into these places where they have all this history behind it, and I guess he saw like a woman at the window on the second floor that he was working in, putting in that supporting beam. But yeah, it's just like the idea of like cool, like you've got this location that's going to work great for you. But then there are the elements of like, okay, cool, like you have this great looking location. Those are real needles, by the way. Like
okay.
that's yeah, that's a liability. That's you know the structural integrity of that place. Like that is a walking tetanus trap that
Well,
they
there's
were working in.
challenges. Yeah, I mean, there's challenges anytime that you're going to make any movie in any kind of natural environment. I mean, a great example was on Lord of the Rings, the first one, and when Sam goes running out to Frodo in the boat. Now, mind you, this is Lord of the Rings. They have plenty of money, and they had their safety officers go out and check around the beach and the shallow water and make sure that there was nothing, that was going to cause any problems. No big rocks to slip on. No, no algae. None of that. And Sean Astin, while running out to the boat, happened to find the one broken bottle that was definitely left in there because he would, you're just shooting in a lake, and some guy at some point threw a broken bottle or threw a bottle into the lake, and it broke. And Sam, so Sean Astin just steps right on it, and they have to break shooting and do all that. So like, or I mean, any movie that takes place in a swamp, like you have to deal with the actual swamp stuff, whether it's just like, whether it's like, whether it's actual crocodiles or poisonous snakes there, but just having to deal with like mosquitoes and flies and such. The fact that there's going to be septic water that's going to be around.
Look up the making of the City of Z. All the shit that went down on that shoot, because that was all shot on location. And even now, I can't remember the filmmaker's name, but he's got a new movie coming out soon.
James Gray, right? I think is the
yes, director yes, that James one? Gray. So he's got a new film coming out, but he was talking about the City of Z. He's just like it was. You run into these issues, kind of like the Island of Dr. Moreau. Like you are at the mercy of the island elements and the tropical elements or the rainforest elements, and it's just nature's never gonna give you a break.
Yeah, no, I mean that's why most of the time, like a bigger Hollywood studio will go and shoot in a stage. And they will make like, so all the swamp stuff in Lord of the Rings, they built on stages a hypoallergenic swamp that looks like a swamp, but has cycling water and fans and lots of stuff to make it as safe as humanly possible.
Unlike the swamps in The Empire Strikes Back, which after shooting, that thing had so much bacteria in it that it was becoming risky for the crewmen, for the camera guys to like submerge themselves above the waist in that water because that bacteria gets into places.
Yeah, I'm sure the people who were making Gator Bait, one of our earlier movies that we recovered, they had all sorts of problems and stories.
I can't imagine the shit they ran into.
You know, because that's shooting in a legitimate swamp, and like those are already. I mean, like anybody who goes camping knows that like just the wilderness will absolutely kill you, or just simple stuff like running around at night in the woods. One of the things a lot of people don't think about is like, yo, man, what if you don't see the stick and it's like a pointy stick sticking out of a tree?
That'll trip, just fall, yeah. Stab.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yes, this movie, shooting in a dilapidated house, there are the restrictions of, you know, how do we, make this structurally sound? Yeah.
But Blair Witch also, Project could have ended very badly.
Yeah, and I haven't looked into the production of that, but I'm almost sure that there were injuries or twisted ankles or things just come running around at full speed. Even with the best of intentions, it's going to happen. I mean, people get hurt on big Hollywood movies where they're shooting on studio sets all the time. No, or not all the time, but, just because, when you are trying to go full bore, it is very easy to slip and fall and just have an accident, especially when cameras are involved and you're trying to, be in that moment and not... And you're trying not to think about the fact that you're on a film set and you're doing this thing. You're trying to be there as an actor, and it's very easy to just, to hurt yourself. I mean, that's what happens a lot of times when stunts go bad, when actors do their own stunts, because they just like they know how to fall. They have pads on, but a stunt person goes to school to learn how to fall, so their natural instincts are to fall the right way, because a lot of times your instinct is just to break your fall, and that is a lot of times how you break your wrist or you break your elbow, or you
crack
worse.
Your tailbone. We're always as like I've been in four semesters of stage combat, and if you're falling backwards, some people's first instinct is to just fall straight back onto your butt, but whereas like no, you actually got to roll back onto the side of your butt, because you roll the wrong way, your tailbone, that shit takes a long time to recover. Well, people don't realize how easy it is to break your butt.
Or how important it is to tuck your chin, so that way after you hit on the ground, you don't crack your head against the back of the, on the ground, because, it's just a lever motion, it's just physics. And stuntmen go to school to learn to react that, okay, like I need to fall this way and tuck this way, and this is how my body naturally reacts. So if something does go wrong, it goes wrong as safely as possible. And sometimes that means
a stunt car driver will straight up, like he will let his whole body go limp as the whole car like flips, tumbles, does whatever it needs to do, because he knows that is the least likely way he is to get it like a permanent injury.
Yeah, and sometimes it's knowing, it's having the like the fortitude, the mental capacity that when it's going wrong, you're like, well, I can do what comes naturally and crack my head open, or I can fall this way and I'm gonna break my arm. But breaking my arm is a lot easier to heal than breaking your skull. And like that's why stuntmen are stuntmen, and that's why they get paid lots of money, because like they have contingencies and backups. And then also part of the reason that you hire stuntmen is if something goes wrong and your stuntman breaks his arm, his leg, his finger, cracks a rib, your actor is still around and you can keep filming. And I know it sounds mean to say like, oh, but we have to keep filming the movie, but like you only get a couple of weeks to shoot the movie. And if you lose your star for a couple of days because of a hairline fracture in his hand, those are days that you have to either make up afterwards or you don't get back, and that is just a loss.
I've gotten to I God, what was it? I was on the set of The Last Ship, a show on TNT, and I returned for like I was on that set for like 2 weeks, and there was an intricate scene that we were doing where the main base is completely invaded, and there's a bunch of pyrotechnics and everything, flying debris every which way, and I do have like a little bit of just light stunt training. But I am not certified in any way. Like, so while all this action is going on, I do mild falls and leaps even there. But like, because I was not a certified stuntman, there's literally like, there's one crew guy's like, hey, you don't have to, please don't do that. Because that is, if something goes wrong, that just halts the shoot for such and such amount of time. Please, for the love of God, please don't do that. They
I had a
kept the
friend who's
shot though, so it worked out great.
I had a friend who was shooting a basketball scene for like no stunts, nothing crazy, just she went to go do a layup and landed on her foot wrong and ended up in a cast for like 6 weeks. Just in the way that anyone playing basketball, pick up basketball with your friends, that can happen. And all you need to do is land in the wrong way. And now, like, and mind you, she was background on it, so it didn't bring the set, like the entire shoot, to a halt. But like, they had to stop because, and then she's not in the scene anymore, and she hurt herself playing pretend, and
And
that's
then
and that,
there's the continuity of it. You can no longer
yeah.
have this one person.
Yeah, so like, and mind you, that's not doing anything dangerous. That is just doing something normal. But shooting a horror movie, especially where you're supposed to be terrorized by ghosts, and also I want to say the terrorizing acting in this is so much fun. The screaming, the being shit, like the being pants shittingly scared, the being kind of a big pussy about it is one of the funnest parts of this movie. The main actor has no problem making an ass out of himself, for the purposes
Oh,
of the movie and the
he's so
character.
good at at being the person that everyone wants to punch.
Absolutely.
Like he's and like he does like I don't know, he when he's talking about just the character, he's like I needed to perfect the type of yell that he did. He's like, obviously this is not how I actually yell, because he's just like he just has the douchiest scream that you could ever hear on
I mean, yeah,
film.
we're talking about a character who, on multiple occasions, gets afraid of a ghost and then runs and hides underneath a blanket as if that's gonna do anything. Like
In a
that's
closet in the same
yeah.
haunted house.
Yeah, that's how a child reacts, but it's so fun. It's so like you so like this is not a badass character who's gonna be able to handle himself. Like this is a guy that you're like, "Oh no, this person is not prepared for what's about to happen to them." They are, they have like he comes with a ghost fighting kit that his mom gives him. That's like garlic, some holy water, a silver cross,
There's
and
apparently there apparently he pitched a part in this that nobody went for, and he was like dead set on this being like absolutely hilarious. And it was oh God, what was it? It was a faith grenade, as he put it. And he pitched it to his wife, and just the idea that he t literally took all of that and duct taped it all up and then like tossed it at the ghost, and it was supposed to like cause the ghost to burst into like a whole bunch of flames. But as he did, he yelled, "Faith grenade!" Bam! And to which his wife said,
No.
genuinely unfunny idea. No one will go for it, but he still pitched it at the script meeting. Deadpan, crickets. Nobody's. Yeah. So he's like, I pitched the faith grenade, crickets. So again, all right, no faith grenade.
Yeah, well, like, and so
it's the one time is like my feelings were a little hurt for about a day or so.
Well, I often say that the best ideas and the worst ideas are often like 1 or 2 degrees off from each other. And that is exactly the kind of the faith grenade might be amazing in the same way that, like, I'm sure when Sam Raimi was like, so what if Ash cuts off his hand and puts a chainsaw on it? There was a good chunk of the people who are going to be like, that's ridiculous. No one's going to love that.
Seems however, a little far-fetched.
Yeah, but the rest of us are like, fuck yes, that sounds
fuck
amazing.
Fuck yes, put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, and the only way to figure out it, whether you have a faith grenade or a chainsaw hand is to pitch it to the rest of the crew. And, you know, they either go for it or they don't. And then you have to have the smarts to trust in the crew and the creative people that you have around you that, okay, wasn't such a good idea. But sometimes that completely out of the box idea is fantastic. One of the things I think I brought up before was on Thor Ragnarok, the set, the scene in the trailer where Thor is put in the arena and the Hulk comes out and he goes, yes, a friend from work. And everyone like laughs, and it's like one of the big trailer moments. It's one of like the funniest parts of that movie. That idea came from a 6-year-old kid who was there because of the Make-A-Wish Foundation and had cancer and was just visiting the set. And so he's near the monitor because, you know, aww, Make-A-Wish Foundation. And so he just jokingly said to Taika, what if he said he's a friend from work? And Taika was like, that sounds amazing. And so they did it, and then they cut it in, and everybody loved it, and that's what's in the movie. But it's a great example of an
idea. That kid has an amazing legacy already.
Right, but like it is one of those things where, like, from a professional standpoint, good ideas wouldn't normally come by the book.
Don't stand. I'm glad. I'm glad that he took it to the writer's room at least.
Oh, no, they didn't. It wasn't even on the writer's room. It was like they were filming it. And Taika was like, let's just do it. Now, mind you, they still had to cut it into the movie. He still had to get it past the producers and the editors and everybody else involved. But it was the fact that he was open to an idea that from a 6-year-old that could be really funny or it could be unbelievably stupid. And you have to, A, roll them dice.
But well, and Taika Waititi is also like he's a wonderfully experimental director who is just a yes-ander to his core. Mm-hmm. So, I would say like the same goes for this couple making this film, where I think they genuinely they're like well, let's see if we can do this. We'll toss this at the wall, see if it sticks. If it doesn't, great. Like it's fascinating because they went straight from this into VHS 99. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, like I think like they did just kind of a back-to-back shoot, and they literally took the same camera rig from that shoot to this one. I think like I have not yet seen, because they were at the same time promoting, they released so close together that they're promoting them both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Deadstream and VHS 99. You have seen their segment on 99. I have not.
I have not either.
Oh, you have not either? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, I have heard good things about VHS 99, and it is one that once we check out, we very much will likely talk about on the program, but we want to, we are doing our best to, like, I had heard so many good things about Deadstream from people I trusted that I was willing to roll them dice.
Yeah.
And I've heard,
I could reach out. Like, I feel like this is one of those other situations where I could shoot my shot in the dark and see if maybe somebody wants to do an interview with us, and maybe that might be something we try out. We'll see.
Yeah, we can cross that bridge when we come to it. But we are making no promises at the moment, and like as David said,
nope.
We're gonna we'll shoot our shot.
Close on the house. We're making zero promises.
Yes. Yeah. No. Exactly. So David, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about with Deadstream?
I mean, it's like aside from that, I think something definitely needs to be said about the creature effects. I think the creature effects are very minimal, but very effective.
Well, they're very Evil Dead in the fact that, like, it's people in rubber, people in rubber suits, or it's like makeup.
People in rubber suits that you put in a bathtub and they suck up all the water, and then the actor in that almost drowns.
It's a lot of makeup and contact lenses, or it's a funny, fake teeth, but it is not. You know, like, these are not giant. This is, Doug Jones was not brought onto this movie. You know what I mean? Like, this is not that kind of thing. This is it's very haunted housey. It is very but it is fun haunted housey, as opposed to like Paranormal Activity, which is a haunted house, but it's very played straight haunted house. This is great time.
Yeah, I think like the creature designer Troy Larson, he based a lot of his work on House and on Creepshow.
Yeah,
I think exactly. I think that that's a great way to compare, a great thing to compare it to. But yeah, my final thoughts on this are like, this is, I mean, we don't bring a movie forward onto this podcast that we wouldn't necessarily recommend. And I think that this is one that it's 80 minutes. It's a quick watch too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So it's a breeze. And it's fun. I think anyone watching this is going to have a great time. Some people have put it on their top found footage list.
I would for sure put it in my top found footage movies.
Oh yeah, 100%. I think it's very well done by two filmmakers who are newer to the game, still have a line of work behind them to show for, but like, this is some of their newer recognized work, and I highly look forward to seeing what else they're going to put out there. So, yeah, but Ken, what about you? Any other final words about this film before we start our sign off?
Yeah, no, it is a haunted hoot and a holler. It is fun. It is short. it is to the point. It is inventive and creative. If you are a filmmaking fan, there's a lot I think that you can take from it. If you are not a filmmaking aficionado and you just like good spooky movies, it is just a really good time. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It does a good job of tying in its theme a little bit, as much as a movie like this kind of can, playing with the idea of, both the ghost and the main character is an influencer and they are trying to, build an audience. There's just a lot of fun going on. And so, yeah, I cannot recommend this highly enough. It was one of my really great discoveries of this year.
Yeah. I do like how, like, one more I will say is that I do like that they take kind of a barbarian approach to it, where you think that the film is trying to redeem this character, and at the end of the whole film is just like, he thinks that through this experience he's redeemed, and then turns out, no, bro, I'm sorry, like, you need more time than that to mm-hmm. come out a better person, and I'm sorry, you're still a piece of shit.
Yeah,
and no. You're dead. Which, have you seen Barbarian yet?
No, that is on my very short list.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine. Don't tell me anymore, but it's on my short list to see soon.
It's so good. Good. Ken, you will appreciate so much about that film. Anyway, but yes, no, highly recommend it. Now, Ken, where can the lovely people find you? Is your Twitter still up and running, or has Elon Musk banned you?
I still have a Twitter. I have not been banned yet, although my screen name currently is Elon Musk has a tiny deformed penis. Tiny misshapen penis. And I have decided that
it's shaped like a tiny Tesla.
Yeah, I have decided that I'm going to go down with the ship. If Twitter is the Titanic, then I'm going to spend my final days picking up pieces of the iceberg and whipping them at the captain. You know what? I'm going down. I'm going down with this baby. But you can find me at Ken Stachnik. You can find us at Shutter Show. You can find me on Instagram at Ken Stachnik. You can email us Gmail at Shutter Show. But also, really briefly, before David, with your pluggables, we should say that the next episode that we're doing, which hopefully will be next week, depending on how the buying of a house goes, we are going to be doing an absolute banger of a movie. One of my favorites from the recent last two decades, The Descent by Neil Marshall. I'm so excited to be talking about it.
It is chef's kiss.
Absolutely.
Of creature features. It's so much fun.
David, where can the good people find you at home?
Oh God. Well, you can find me on Instagram, where I host our page at Shutter_show, where you'll find our announcements on the episodes coming out, where I will occasionally post the humorous horror memes and such. I'm not great at the whole technology behind Instagram. I'll figure it out one day. You can also find me on Instagram at underscore DW Marlowe, where I get up to my regular musings, everyday carpentry stuff, and the occasional fun, charming moments with my wife and puppy. But yeah, that's about it. Ken, yeah, anything else from you, good sir?
Other than I just want to let everybody know that, yeah, as I guess as Twitter Twitter falls apart, Facebook is falling apart, which means Instagram is probably around the corner. I don't know if we're going to end up on Mastodon or if we're going to end up on one of the other ones that I can't remember the name of at the moment. TikTok. We will figure it out. Or if we end up starting a TikTok, we will cross that bridge and we will let you know. And until then, you can find us on all your favorite podcast apps and of course on YouTube. And other than that, I would say good night, good luck, and most importantly, everybody, go fuck yourselves.
Nah, to you. Fuck you, Elon Musk.